All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Where it is a sunny and mild day on Lake Wissota as we start this second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, April 14th. Coming up this hour, as usual, we'll talk to our friend Mark Jacob down in Chicago, author and media critic who looks at the way national media has covered the stories of the past week. And as always, there's something to be said about media coverage, especially as you have forces in our country that are being increasingly against democracy, to put it mildly. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher near the end of the show and kind of preview some weekend sports, all that and more, plus your phone calls if you like at 844-967-2789 and 715-388-7155, because 715 Day is something we want to make happen in July throughout more of the 715. We talk about it, of course, because today is 414 Day, April 14th, around the Milwaukee area. So we've been talking about that a little bit earlier on today. And if you want to get more of the news that we cover at Up North News, you can get our daily newsletter. Just go to upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget the WI and click newsletter in the top banner. We're going to bring in State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire here. And I'm looking at a story in the Eau Claire Leader Telegram and notes that we were aware of prior to the story being published that noted in 3 years before Glenn Perry killed Chautauqua police officer and a Cameron police officer last weekend, Perry made comments to his family that he would shoot and kill police officers and told them that he drove around with two guns in his car. His story is not unfamiliar, and it is, again, something that seems to be almost literally crying out for red flag laws in this country, certainly in the state, which are still lacking. So we want to bring in Representative Jody Emerson to talk more about that. Jody, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I appreciate you having me, but I wish we were not here to talk about this topic today. So
yeah, you and me both, but here we are. Yeah. So you have seen, I have seen those criminal complaints from the past that talk about Glenn Perry. And we should add that the State Department of Justice is doing its investigation on the scene. We don't have specific information on it, but it is pretty clear, Jody, from Glenn Perry's past that this is an occasion where we say, could we in Wisconsin be doing more to get guns out of the hands of people who are proven, adjudicated to be a threat to themselves and others?
Yeah, I think that's what this whole conversation needs to be about. And I want to start by saying that my heart goes out to those who are affected by this tragedy last weekend. And really, those affected by this tragedy are law enforcement officers all over the state, people in the whole Barron County community, and obviously the friends and loved ones of the two officers who were killed. And I don't want anybody to say that I am trying to make political hay with this, because I would rather have anything happen than have to have this conversation with you. But I've worked really hard during my political career to put some protections in line to make sure that PTSD for our first responders is covered, to protect them from the harm that they may do to themselves because of the job. And nothing frustrates me more than to see protections that we might have been able to have in place if we could have had this conversation in Wisconsin that would have protected, could have protected, might have protected our officers from this situation, from outside themselves. And so that's why I'm coming to you today, is it's time Wisconsin has this conversation, and people need to be educated about what is called red flag laws. The word that's used in the statutory language that we've tried to get is extreme risk protection temporary restraining order. Temporary restraining orders are what we're talking about with this. So if somebody is concerned about you being a threat to yourself or others, and you have access to firearms, having an extreme risk protection temporary restraining order means there is a way to have those weapons removed from a house.
Not just a way, a process, a legal process. This is not somebody feels like coming to get your guns. This is not like, and I'll always come back to this because I think it was one of the most offensive things Tim Michaels said when he was running for governor, mm-hmm. that we don't need red flag laws because women will just make up stories about the husbands they're fighting with to get their hunting rifles taken away. It was a grotesque distortion of a legal process where a judge has to look at evidence and essentially say, yes, this person is a threat to themselves or others. This is a process that's in other states. And it, you know, unfortunately, the circumstances again show how it could be useful in Wisconsin and keep people safe.
Yeah. And looking at this criminal complaint from 2020, you know, it says if they, meaning the family of Mr. Perry, called the cops on him or put him in the hospital, he would kill them. This guy had already threatened and had a lot of, there's other language in here about police officers and what he wants to do to police officers. And I'm not going to read it out loud because I think those who are hurting and have a police officer in their life don't need to hear that directly, but it is well documented.
It is, but we know that it's there. And again, that is the crux of what would put a red flag protection order into place. We're going to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation with State Representative Jody Emerson about keeping people safe from others who insist on putting politics ahead of the lives of cops and kids and the rest of us. We'll be back here up north. We're going to talk more about gun violence and the very real, very supportive things that can be done to prevent it, and continue that conversation with State Representative Jody Emerson coming up in just a bit. First, Jennifer Wojcicki is here, meteorologist with Weatherology, to take us into a weekend across Wisconsin where we go into it having been downright summer-like. We're not going winter-like entirely, but we're getting into that messy middle for a little while. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Michael Carey here filling in today for Jennifer.
Hey, Mike. How are you? What did you do with Jennifer?
She wanted to have this nice Friday off here.
I cannot blame her for one moment. All right. Well, yeah. Mike, tell us more about the weekend forecast here.
Yeah, well, after those numerous records across the state yesterday, we're going to be at or just shy of record high temperatures once again, pretty much for all of the state for today, looking at high temperatures pretty much statewide in the lower to middle range of the 80s with sunny to partly cloudy skies expected and a bit of a southerly breeze to around 10 to 20 miles per hour by this afternoon. So still some high fire danger concerns across the region with those warm and breezy conditions, especially later on today. As soon as tonight, we'll have some increase in cloud cover, though, as our next cold frontal boundary and the developing low pressure system begin to approach from the west. Still looking to stay dry though statewide for tonight, with those overnight low temperatures looking to drop back into the lower to middle range of the 50s. Then into the day on Saturday, the best chance for some showers and some thunder showers early in the day, especially across the western half of the state, areas like Amory over to near Eau Claire and La Crosse. But by the afternoon time frame, those scattered showers and storms looking to overspread much of the state into the afternoon time frame. Just a very marginal risk for some strong to severe storms, especially in areas to the southwest of Madison there by Saturday afternoon into the evening. I think hail and some gusty winds would be the primary threats there, again, just for far southern portions of the state. For Saturday, still quite warm temperature-wise, especially for the eastern two-thirds, still working up well into the upper 70s to maybe even close to that 80-degree mark in areas like Madison, even as far north as Oshkosh and up to near Green Bay. But further off to the west, starting to see some cooler temperatures infiltrating areas like Amory up to near Rice Lake, only expecting 50s and 60s for high temperatures over that way. Then for Saturday night, rain quite widespread across the state of Wisconsin, could still have some embedded thunderstorms as well. Overnight low temperatures for your Saturday night, tumbling all the way back into the upper 30s for the northwestern corner of the state, but still for areas like Madison, Milwaukee, as well as Oshkosh, sticking closer to the 50s for those overnight low temperatures. Temperatures continue to cool into the day on Sunday. In fact, the temperature is holding fairly steady in the upper 50-degree range for areas like Madison over to near Milwaukee, but upper 30s and lower 40s into areas like Amory as well as the Rice Lake. So we could even have some wet snowflakes mixing in there for northwestern Wisconsin during the day on Sunday. And then that rain-snow mixture line looks to progress eastward for pretty much all of the state into Sunday night. So wouldn't be surprised to see some minor snow accumulations, especially on the grassy areas there by the time you wake up Monday morning. And Monday looking quite chilly, not getting out of the 40s for high temperatures, even as far south as Madison and Milwaukee, maybe some lower 50s in areas closest to the Mississippi River there on Monday, but definitely a much cooler stretch of weather later on this weekend and into early next work week.
All right. And as always, weatherology updates throughout the day on all of our Civic Media radio stations. Michael, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. All right, there's Michael Kaver from Weatherology giving us our update there. And we'll continue our conversation now with State Representative Jody Emerson. Jody, I think I had you on mute. You look like you're unmuted. Are you back with us?
I think I'm back with you.
I think you are as well. All right. So I want to set things up again for folks that might have joined us a little late. There were two law enforcement officers, one from Chautauqua, one from Cameron, who were murdered last weekend during a traffic stop by a guy whose past was well known, his violent history, his rhetoric about killing police officers and such. And as such, and I'm going to play the bad guy here, because Representative Emerson is here in a very responsible manner to talk about things we can do to keep cops and kids safe. I don't want one person out there saying that, you know, we're politicizing this. If anybody's politicizing this, it's the people who are putting their politics ahead of the safety of cops, kids, and all the rest of us. That there are common sense things that can be done that have been proposed by Governor Tony Evers, who called a special session at one point to address the scourge of gun violence. And it was gaveled in and gaveled out. And instead, in Wisconsin over the past decade, much like more recently in places like Florida, gun laws have been made more lax. And as a result, we've had these mass shootings. We've had these terrible tragedies. So we are again going to come back to this to talk about things that can be done, that can be proposed, that can they will prevent other tragedies like these. Not all of them, but there will be some degree of prevention in there. And Representative Emerson, where I'll start with you is just stating the obvious. It's been polled several times. Red flag laws, like universal background checks, there's nothing partisan about it. These are measures that enjoy broad bipartisan support from the people of Wisconsin.
Yeah, when people understand what an extreme risk protection order means, they support it. A lot of people put up a blockade with this because it involves guns and they've read the partisan headlines for their side and no one's going to take this from me ever. Well, if you're a responsible gun owner, no one is going to take anything from you. The only time that a gun is removed is when you are a threat to yourselves or others. And when we talk about that aspect, nobody wants guns to be in the hands of somebody who is a threat to themselves or others. And it's time we start having this discussion. I look at the horrible tragedies that have happened in Tennessee. And the governor of Tennessee recently did some executive orders doing his part. And I would not call the governor of Tennessee a bleeding heart liberal by any stretch of the imagination, but no. He knew people who were killed.
Yeah. And again, it shouldn't have taken that. These things shouldn't be happening after one more incident, after one more protest march, after one more whatever. And all we're saying is we have to stop going backwards. And we went backwards in Wisconsin, first by allowing concealed carry with a permit, but then even proposing to roll back the training, our police officers, our law enforcement, our men and women in the military take training to learn the right ways to handle their weapon. It's part of that, you know, well-regulated militia. And yet what we have here, Jody, and I don't mean to box you in on something because this is a serious topic, but I said it earlier this week. I don't think there is a single dumber bill that was introduced in this legislature this year than the one this week that said, let's let teachers have loaded weapons in classrooms and other school employees. It is, no pun intended, it is a cop-out. It is lazy. I'm looking at the Facebook comments, people saying, you know, that, yeah, this is Governor Evers' fault because teachers aren't armed. And I'm not going to get, you know, mixed up in the comment section with folks like that. But I'm thankful for you and other grownups who are saying, why don't we take on some of the responsible measures that can save lives instead of turning our schools and our streets into the Wild West?
Yeah, and it's time that this is what I'm here about today, is it's time we have the discussion about who should have access to weapons, when should those weapons be removed, if at all, for how long. When I talked to the reporter yesterday from the Leader Telegram, he was asking me all kinds of details. And I said, you know, I can't come to you with that because we've never had the discussion in the state of Wisconsin. We put these bills out and the Republicans shove them in a drawer. And I think the state of Wisconsin, the people of the state of Wisconsin, the people who hearts are aching today because they've lost a loved one, either recently or a long time ago because of gun violence, deserve us to have this conversation about who should have access to weapons, for how long, when, things like that. And it's, I fought too hard to keep police and other first responders safe with other things. And it's time that we do this. And I'm just very, very frustrated. My heart hurts today for the communities of Cameron and Chautauqua and Barron County. And we just need to do something soon.
Right. And look, again, under the category, the least you can do is the Republicans in the legislature could address what the conservative majority on the state Supreme Court acknowledged was a nonsensical loophole, that because of how the state's disorderly conduct law was written, it is possible that some people with a conviction for domestic violence could still possess firearms. Certainly not the intent of anybody, but to even do that would lead to people rushing to TV cameras, rushing to microphones on right-wing talk radio to say the government is coming for your guns. It is irresponsible. It is reckless to the point of endangering others. And that these are things where I got to ask, Jody, you talk to rank and file members there, not as often probably as we all used to in happier times, but boy, I would sure like to think maybe you can count on one hand the number of Republicans who, if it were really put up for a vote, they would do things like close these loopholes, maybe support a red flag law. I don't know. I can't ask you to jump into their minds, but God, I hope you're having at least one or two encouraging conversations there sometimes.
We're trying to have conversations all the time about some of these debates that the public wants us to have. I'm not even going to say that we're going to come to a solution. There certainly are tough issues that we're debating that we can't come to solutions on. But to put some of these topics where we're just not even having the conversation, it's time that everybody that I work with step up so we can have this conversation, so we can figure out what is the sweet spot in Wisconsin. How can we work together to keep the guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them? And that doesn't matter if you're in a tiny village up north, if you're in a large city in the southeast corner of the state. Nobody wants to have guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. Yeah. And there was a tragedy in Barron County because we couldn't do that. This guy had guns and shouldn't have.
Much like earlier, when there was a tragedy in Kenosha, when Kyle Rittenhouse shot and killed two protesters in Kenosha in 2020, and he was initially going to be charged with possessing a firearm as a minor, which is a misdemeanor, but his lawyers were able to point out again that the way things were written, even minors can carry loaded rifles in public in Wisconsin right now. There's just no shortage of some basic things that you could almost call housekeeping that would keep people safe in Wisconsin if more colleagues of yours in the legislature would simply do their job of putting people ahead of politics. Jody, it's always great to talk to you. I'm sorry that it's under such serious circumstances this time, but you know, thanks again for bringing the issue to our attention, and have a great weekend. We'll be talking again very soon.
Nice to talk to you as well, Pat. Take care.
All right. Take care. When we come back, Mark Jacob joins us. He will talk about some of the media coverage of this week's big stories. Then we'll have Dan Schumacher a little while after that as we wrap things up for a Friday morning here on Up North News Radio on this 414 day. We'll be back. Radio with Mark Jacob, author, former Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune, and we talk on Fridays about some of the stories going on and how media has covered them, because what good does it do for us to have media careers if we can't second guess ourselves and all of our colleagues? How you doing, Mark?
Doing great.
Let's see. I think since last we spoke, the Democratic National Committee made it official that Chicago is going to be the site next year for the Democratic National Convention, just down the road from Milwaukee, where a lot of us think they should have gone back to where Republicans are already going next year. So tell me your reaction and the city's reaction to the convention, to the Democrats coming to Chicago. And of course, what it says about, you know, the role the Midwest is supposed to play in next year's presidential election.
Yeah, I mean, the reaction in Chicago, I'm just actually surprised there isn't more negative reaction, because you know how it is, you know, oh, it's going to be inconvenient and all that stuff. I mean, there's certainly enough grumbling about the NASCAR race that's going to be in downtown Chicago in a few months. People don't like that very much. But the convention, you know, see, people seem to be fine with it. I was surprised. But it is a little odd. I mean, there's this whole thing as well. You need to put it in a state that's a swing state, you know, but there's a lot of data that show that it doesn't really help, you know, you doesn't help you win just to put a convention there. I mean, Chicago's got a little, got a history of interesting conventions, you must say, but, you know, I think the Midwest is super important, not necessarily Illinois. Illinois is very, seems solidly blue, but you know, that whole wall of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, I mean, seem to be as important as anything in next year's, you know, presidential race. Right. So, I mean, I guess Chicago's got a bunch of hotel rooms, so it kind of makes sense. I don't think we're going to have, you know, riots in the streets or anything. It'll probably just be conventions that have become pretty boring, I think.
They haven't. I don't think they mean nearly as much, because if a state is going to get attention, and actually if that attention is going to play a role, unfortunately for Democrats, I think the ultimate example of that is, you know, Hillary Clinton hasn't come to Wisconsin. Hillary Clinton hasn't come to Wisconsin. Hillary Clinton still hasn't come to Wisconsin. People don't remember where a convention was, but they remember if a major candidate didn't come to a swing state and took it for granted. So it's not so much where you're going with the convention, it's where you're going with the candidate, and, you know, don't leave anybody out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, conventions are also, they're made for TV, you know, affairs these days anyway. I covered, when I was at the Tribune in Chicago, I covered the convention, the Sarah Palin convention, you might call it, the one in Minnesota. And I was an editor, not a reporter, so I wasn't on the floor. And so I was, you know, I was like 100 feet from the convention in a little cubicle, kind of watching it on TV along with everyone else. It wasn't like, you know, some sort of spectacular event for most of the people covering it. It was just watch a TV to see what's happening 100 feet away that you can't be at.
Exactly. I mean, conventions, for various reasons, mostly good, I would hasten to add, they're not the smoke-filled rooms, you know, where nominees are actually chosen. They're much more of a coronation these days. Let's turn to the collapsing black hole that appears to be Twitter, and, you know, what has happened since, you know, Elon Musk bought it and is trying so hard to run it into the ground in the most dramatic way possible. And for a platform like Twitter to decide that they're going to label a media outlet like National Public Radio as quote unquote as government funded media actually led NPR to say, fine, we're leaving Twitter. We can't work here if you're going to slap that kind of a label, that kind of an untrue label on us. You know, what was your take on what the hell Twitter was thinking?
Well, it's hard to know what Twitter's thinking since Elon Musk, you know, acts like a, you know, 12-year-old kid who's, you know, had too many Coca-Colas or something. He's just goofy. I mean, he just acts ridiculous. You know, it's a little stupid little jokes he makes, sexist jokes and just dumb jokes. And the way by his own admission, since he bought Twitter, the value of Twitter has been cut in half at least. He's lost tens of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. I mean, tens of billions. It's insane, kind of the way he's operated it. And the NPR thing is, you'd think that they would have thought about that, and that they would. But it seems like everything is just run, you know, from the seat of his pants. Nobody thinks about anything, and then they all react to stuff. And you know, it was even worse what he did with BBC doing the same thing, because the BBC is actually routed differently and constructed differently to where it's not, you know, a government and it's
well, that's the thing. It's the gross oversimplification, right? That, you know, if you get basically a dollar in government funding, you're government funded, when the fact of the matter is that Elon Musk's other endeavors, you know, like Tesla, have received far more government funding in terms of a fraction of, you know, their business ventures. If anything's government funded, it's been, you know, what Elon Musk has been doing prior to Twitter.
Well, and also Twitter as well. Twitter is, you know, a good fraction of Twitter is owned by the Saudis. The Saudis are one of his main backers in that. I mean, I don't have a figure with it, but it's somewhere around a quarter or so of Twitter is financed by the Saudis, the Saudi government. That's government funded media. Mm-hmm. So what is he talking about? And it's and this idea that, I mean, you saw this, there was some backlash against NPR. Well, good riddance, we don't care. They're, you know, liberal media. You know, NPR is not liberal media. I'm sorry. I know liberal media. I'm liberal on some issues and I see it. NPR, I've taken them to task before because they're very super sensitive to this kind of criticism, and so it causes them to behave in a totally both sides way. Well, here's the Republican, here's the Democrat. We'll give them equal time. We'll act like they're both telling the truth, whether they are or not. And I mean, to me, the NPR, the typical NPR interview with a Republican who's just dead set on lying about things is to ask them a question, not get an answer. Go on to the next question. Don't press the question at all. Just let them not answer the question. Go on to the next question. Have them not answer that. Go on to the next question and then thank them for their time. That's pretty much their formula.
And that's also what you point out frequently with CNN. And they've done that with guests, with quote unquote contributors. Right. One of the more recent examples is having Trump's former Attorney General Bill Barr on. And why? You ask appropriately, why would you have this guy on and ask about anything else and completely miss his other abuses in office, the way that he, you know, distorted the Mueller report and, right, and all kinds of other things? Well, why wouldn't that be at least the first thing before you get to other matters?
Well, you know, this example, the latest example was he might be on CNN and saying that, well, you know, the thing that Alvin Bragg, the Manhattan DA, has brought against Trump, you know, Barr saying, well, nobody brought that to me at the Justice Department. That's BS. It's total BS. There's a Berman, one of the guys in the, you know, the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York was, I mean, he's written a book saying that Barr put the, you know, put the brick on that case. Barr has totally was acting as Trump's attorney, not as a United States attorney. And there's so much documentation. So what does Caitlin Collins at CNN do about it? Does she like push back and say, well, this person said this, this person said this, there's this evidence? No, none of that. Either it's inadequate prep, either. She didn't do her homework, or she and her producers didn't do their homework and have answers ready, have documentation ready because they knew he was going to say something like that, or they just don't care, or they just think that they would look, you know, gee, if we bring up actual facts, we're going to look biased. And that's a scary thing in news media today, is that journalists who are afraid that if they bring up actual facts and context, they're going to look biased.
Exactly. Now look to our next example, which would be all we've learned about U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and having this billionaire, you know, sugar daddy, essentially, who's right, you know, taking him on these lavish vacations and now, you know, buying or selling property on his behalf, and all of it, again, not reported. And it appears that Chief Justice John Roberts is the one who's bothered about the coverage of it, not about whether one of his justices might be engaged in illegal conduct. But again, it's incumbent upon media outlets to keep the focus on the legalities or the illegalities of the conduct and not the soap opera of you know, whether John Roberts, you know, has his knickers in a twist.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give ProPublica a lot of credit. I mean, they've been terrific on the Clarence Thomas story. You know, previously they were terrific on one of the biggest stories in Wisconsin, which was about Ron Johnson, you know, doing favors, tax cut favors for his rich donors.
Right.
That was a ProPublica story as well, I believe. And this one, you know, it was a new aspect of it yesterday. You know, at first they reported that, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of free trips had been, you know, lavished upon Clarence Thomas by this Republican mega donor with no disclosure at all. And the thing yesterday that was broke was, to me, was in some ways worse because it's more explicitly against the law that he did not disclose that this mega donor bought his mom's house, a house that he owned, along with his the estate of his dead brother and his mom, and that his mom lives in. And then this donor, Harlan Crowe, does tens of thousands of dollars worth of repairs to make it nicer for the mom who lives there and buys properties around there and knocks down the houses that he doesn't like that aren't nice and improves the neighborhood for her. And I mean, that is a financial favor for a member of the U.S. Supreme Court. And Thomas didn't disclose it. I mean, this guy, I mean, sugar daddy is really the right word. This guy has decided that he's going to substantially make Clarence Thomas's life better financially while he's sitting in the U.S. Supreme Court. And Thomas isn't going to say a thing about it, isn't going to disclose it. You know, Pat, I mean, Thomas ought to be charged with a crime. I mean, in today's America, I mean, because he violated the disclosure law. I'm not saying it's a crime that would throw him in jail for a long time, but it's a crime. He violated the law. But is, you know, can we count on Merrick Garland to charge him or anyone to charge him? The real scary thing is, to me, is criminals getting away with things. And that's what you see a lot in America today.
It really does. And then finally, let's turn to the Fox Propaganda and Racism channel, where Tucker Carlson, who really should be doing his show wearing a white robe, has been going off on just some amazing racist rants this week, but has also taken the Fox viewers into an interesting direction. The people, as you wrote, who once were super patriots are now essentially dictator-loving traitors, you know, who are standing with somebody that has given away top secrets because he's, you know, a white Christian member of the military. And that's it. Now, again, putting all of that before country.
Right. I mean, you know, if this was somebody who was, you know, a liberal or God forbid trans, that would be the big story, and what a traitor.
Oh, they'd be calling for an execution on the spot.
Oh, no question. I mean, the real scary thing, and this is that tweet of mine, was trying to point out that this constant propaganda by Fox News has really turned people who were America loving, you know, really patriotic people into hating their country, hating the FBI, hating DOJ, hating, you know, all federal agencies, loving Vladimir Putin, thinking that a free country, Ukraine, ought to be like captured and, you know, subjugated, and thinking that, you know, we should be palling up with dictators like, you know, like MBS in Saudi Arabia, who, you know, who dismembered a journalist. I mean, that they have, and there's no, they've gone so far. They've just, it's just, you know, through the looking glass now. And it's very alarming, because I did think these people who are MAGA types think they love their country, but they keep on supporting people who don't. And And the weird thing is, all these, you know, left-wing people or, you know, progressive people who used to be, like, called communists, they're the ones who are sticking up for American values, for, like, not banning books and stuff. And so, if you're for banning books and closing libraries, you ought to really look at yourself and think about, you know, what do you really stand for? Is that an American value? I don't think so.
No. And we didn't even have time again for the latest revelations about Fox from the Dominion lawsuit, but we will cover that again in 2 weeks. Mark Jacob, thanks so much. Right. Appreciate your insight. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you later.
All right. Coming up next, Dan Schumacher, but also we're going to talk about 414 Day and an opportunity to subscribe to a reporter who does some amazing work, Dan Schaefer over at the Recombobulation Area. So we'll talk about that next here up north. I'm a loser, baby, so why don't you kill me? You know what I'm saying? Ooh, Aaron is trying to play, stump the band with Dan Schumacher on Grateful Dead tunes. What?
That's a late 60s. It's one of the earlier ones when Pigpen was still with the band.
That is correct. It is Cream Puff War.
Cream Puff Wars, there it is. It's very rarely played ever, even by the new iteration.
That's funny. We're gonna talk to Dan Schumacher more in just a second. First, I want to just say a couple of words about a different Dan Schaefer, one of our favorite journalists in the Milwaukee area. He puts together a new site called the Recombobulation Area, named for something at the Milwaukee airport, and he is having a subscription sale. And so I cannot recommend highly enough, if you want to cover anything, if you want to know about Wisconsin politics, Wisconsin news, we of course want you to follow Up North News. We want you to follow some of the responsible outlets out there, like the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and others. But you really have to have Dan Schaefer in there too. He's on Twitter at Dan R. Schaefer, Schaefer, or just look for Recombobulation Here. How many recombobulations can there be, you know, on the interwebs? And subscribe to his newsletter for 414 Day. You will not be unhappy about it in the least. Brewers beat San Diego 4-3 in 10 innings last night. Rowdy Tellez with a 10th inning sacrifice fly, as well as a homer in the first inning. They continue that four-game series tonight out in San Diego. Now, Dan's up on the Chippewa River just south of Jim Falls, just south of the dam there. So he and I are both in between those dams in Jim Falls and in Chippewa Falls. And so normally the water doesn't have massive fluctuations in it because of the two dams. But with all the snow melt up north, Dan, the water is just crazy up by you and only a little less so by the time it gets down to me.
Yeah. I mean, you can actually hear the water moving, which is not something I'm used to. It sounds like rapids, and it's there's many things floating. I tell you what, they've never seen so much stuff floating in the water either. So that's because the water's so high, it's grabbing things off the shore and bringing them back in. So it's pretty
interesting. And I like, you posted yesterday, you're trying to have breakfast out on your deck overlooking the river, and there's some goofball in a boat, you know, with all the flotsam and jetsam that must be in that water. There's no way I would do that to my prop or to my boat.
No. And I don't even know what I kept trying to figure out is, where did they put the boat in?
Yeah.
Because all the landings are not prepared. I mean, they don't set them up until fishing opener, the DNR. And secondly, the water's got to be so high. How did they even get it in and out with the, and then the current is so bad. How did they get it out to get it up into a lift or anything? Because a lift would be underwater right now.
Yeah, it would.
So I'm baffled.
And we were joking that, I mean, it's not like if he gets in trouble, you're not going to call the sheriff's office, because the sheriff's office is going to say, our boat's still in storage because we're not crazy enough to go out there yet. But it does, if you'll pardon me, it lets me go on one rant about the river running high. And this comes back to my time as a state legislator. You'll note that in Chippewa Falls, there is now a park downtown, right by the downtown dam. And there's a riverside park in Eau Claire as well. And people have been making, you know, jokes online about the parks flooding. Folks, that's what they're designed to do.
Right.
One of my first earmarks as a state legislator was to get some money in the 2007 state budget to buy out some of those properties in downtown Chippewa Falls near there, so that the properties could be torn down, because otherwise every time it flooded, you were paying either through your insurance bill or through your taxes to either evacuate people or make repairs. Right. So you get those buildings out of there, you turn it into green space, and yeah, it may flood and you may have to, you know, do a little maintenance afterwards, but it's so much cheaper than if we were still evacuating, repairing, rebuilding. So yeah, the water's high. That's what water's going to do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the park down, like you said, down, it was specifically designed to handle this type of flooding, the park downtown Chippewa. So
yeah, as were others. And so you can go near it if you want, but boy, stay away from it. The power there is just unbelievable.
All the chutes are open. Everything is wide open downtown, and it's wide open up in Jim Falls. All three chutes are all open, so they're letting it all fly.
Hey, back to sports. I believe your Chicago Bulls are one game away from potentially playing the Milwaukee Bucks in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
It's the Bulls versus the Heat tonight, right? In the play-in game.
Yep.
And the winner of that. So Chicago had won their play-in game. Miami lost theirs a couple of days ago, and so Chicago and Miami will play to see who is the number 8 seed. And then Milwaukee, of course, is the number 1 seed. Look, I'm not going to say I follow either one of these teams. I know how good Giannis and the Bucks are. Do we have any reason to think that either the Bulls or the Heat, whoever wins tonight's game, would present any kind of an obstacle to the Bucks?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think there's the depth. I don't think that there's the talent. There's a reason why you're fighting for the 8th seed instead of playing in the 1 seed. So I don't know. I thought it was pretty controversial this past week, though, in the NBA, where it seemed to be that the Mavericks laid down when the Bulls played them this week to put them in this position. I know that Mark Cuban has gotten a lot of criticism because he didn't play his star players, or he kept people out to purposely get a higher lottery pick.
See, that's the thing. And when people asked earlier this week, you know, why do they do this play-in tournament? Why do the 7, 8, 9, and 10 all have to play to see who actually becomes the 7 and 8 in the playoffs? Mm-hmm. Part of it was so that teams, you know, wouldn't be necessarily jockeying for draft positions. But, you know, you can try all kinds of things. But some teams, if they see a route to a particular draft pick, it's kind of hard to stop them from laying down.
Yeah. But I can't remember if they changed the process for the draft. I thought the lottery was the little ping pong.
I was going to say, do they put the ping pong balls or the envelope in the freezer? I mean,
losing that game and not getting, they must get a couple extra balls in the lottery process or something. I don't, you know, it's not like the NFL where we're based on how you finished. You knew where you were at for your position in the draft.
Yeah.
So, I don't know everything about the NBA when it comes to that, but I do know that the Mavs lost to the Bulls, which put the Bulls in a position to have the play-in game.
Yeah,
so that's, you know, controversial.
Yeah, the Bulls are actually the the number 10 team coming into this.
Right.
But they defeated Dallas, which was at 9, and now they'll play Miami, the number 8. And, you know, so if Miami wins, they just stay as the 8 seed. But if Miami loses this, they're out, and the number 10 team comes in at number 8. It's unusual, but again, the answer to all your questions is money.
Yeah.
So if a couple of more playoff games, you know, get you some money, get you some drama, you know, all the better for it.
Some viewers.
How's
your Brewers though? Your Brewers are in first place by one game still.
Brewers are in first place, you know.
West Coast trip.
I could use the bats coming back to life again. Yelich went 0-for-4 yesterday. Garrett Mitchell three times.
What are they gonna do with him,
Pat? Grounded into double plays with two men on. So I don't know.
He can't hit the ball, and they keep him in the 4 spot.
I know.
I don't understand it.
Hey, all I can say to that, because I'm out of time now, is it's early. So Dan, have a great weekend. Thanks for helping wrap up the week with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a beautiful week of weather up north.
I know, sure has. All right, we will have Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign come Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you then.